Go ahead and open up your Bibles to Genesis chapter 41. We are continuing in our series through the book of Genesis. Now, I read about a college student a few years ago who had never cooked a Thanksgiving meal. And so on Thanksgiving Day, he was at the college campus. And right before lunchtime on Thanksgiving, he texted his mom and he said, "Hey, Mom, how long do I microwave a 25-pound turkey for?" Well, his mom called him back immediately and said, "Please tell me you're joking." Well, apparently he wasn't. So this poor guy genuinely believed that the hours of prep to throw a giant bird into the microwave could be skipped, and then it could just be a quick, instantaneous Thanksgiving feast. Well, when the mom posted about this, the internet world found it hilarious because everyone knows that a good turkey meal takes time. You can't rush delicious, juicy turkey. And as we're going to see today, that you can't rush God's plan either. And so the title of today's message is From the Prison to the Palace, Part 2. We looked at Part 1 last week, where we saw poor Joseph in chapter 40, stuck in prison. And the main idea of the message last week was that God is present in the prison. So even though Joseph was in prison, suffering, God hadn't left him. And so God gave Joseph the ability to interpret dreams. God blessed them in that way. And so then Joseph helped others. So he was blessed, so then he blessed others in return. And he helped the cupbearer and the baker interpret their strange dreams as well. And so the interpretations came true. So the baker was hung, and the cupbearer was restored to his position. So Joseph, though, as he gave the interpretation to the cupbearer, Joseph then asked them to say, "Please remember me. Please show me kindness. Show me the chesed, the loving kindness, the faithfulness." However, the cupbearer got out of prison. What did he do? He forgot about Joseph and went along his way free, while Joseph spent 2 more years sort of simmering in prison, all because God wasn't microwaving him. He was slow roasting a leader. And just like that turkey, Joseph wasn't ready to be served until the time was right. Just right. And today, we're going to see how waiting doesn't mean that God has forgotten you. It means that he's still cooking. And so in the first part of chapter 41, we see that God prepares before he promotes. In verse 1, the first part of verse 1 says, after 2 years passed before anything took place. So from the events of chapter 40 into chapter 41, 2 years passed. Joseph waits, and he waits, and he waits. And so even though God was clearly with Joseph, Joseph had to have been wondering during that time what God was doing, what was going on. And during the next few verses, now 2 years later, Pharaoh dreams some concerning dreams. And so let me read, starting again in verse 1. So after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing in the Nile, or by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows, and Pharaoh awoke. Don't you hate it when that happens, when the thin ones eat the fat ones? And then he fell asleep again and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump full ears. And Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. So this would be very concerning. These were scary dreams to Pharaoh as an Egyptian king, because cows and grain were the main parts of his economy. And so, to use a modern example, let's pretend that I am a bivocational pastor. Now, I'm blessed that I work here at the church full-time, so I'm paid as a full-time pastor. But if I was bivocational, that would mean that I would have to work another additional, usually full-time job to support my family, and then do pastoring for little or no pay, which many pastors do, by the way. But as a bivocational pastor in my made-up world, I'm in my full-time job, which is as an owner of a bubble tea shop. And so one night, I have a dream about old, dried-up boba, these tapioca balls, eating nice, fresh, plump boba. And then I wake up, I'm scared. And then after that, I fall asleep again. I have a second dream about old, cold, green tea swallowing up my freshly made steaming oolong tea. So this is scary stuff here, people. It's a nightmare. Why? Because for me, boba is how I pay the bills. And my main source of income is rebelling against me. And so that's exactly why Pharaoh was so concerned. And so what does Pharaoh do about this? Well, in verse 8, so in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. So this was really a standard way of solving things. Kings had people on their staff who could supposedly interpret dreams. But in this case, none of these dream interpreters could interpret any of the dreams that they had. And so suddenly, the cupbearer, who had been restored to his position now, remembers in the recesses of his memory some guy in prison who could interpret dreams. And I told you last week that the cupbearer and the baker positions were not just, you know, the people who served food. He was not just a drink taster, but he was also likely a trusted advisor. And so the cupbearer speaks up. Verse 9, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. And when he told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged." And that's good enough for Pharaoh. And so Pharaoh then calls for Joseph. Verse 14. And then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. And they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. So obviously, living in the prison was not the cleanest situation, and so before he can stand before the king, before Pharaoh, he has to be cleaned up. And so when they say shaved him, they're not just talking about a beard. In Egyptian culture, it was normal to shave all hair, and so he got a full shave. Verse 15, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." And Joseph answered Pharaoh, "It is not me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." So notice that Joseph is quick to give the credit to God. So this is different than his first dream at the age of 17. So he is a changed man. Not only is he older, probably about 13 or so years older, but he's wiser and he's more mature as well. So Pharaoh then tells Joseph his dream, and we won't reread the dream there. And what in the world, though, he's thinking, could this strange dream mean? And Joseph is probably thinking then that he's glad he's not the one that has to figure it out, because it's God who's going to give him the interpretation. He had been relying on God all throughout the prison, and so now in the moment, when really his entire future hangs in the balance, because if he helps Pharaoh, surely Pharaoh is at least going to get him out of prison, maybe send him back home, but he continues to rely on God. Verse 25, and then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven cows are 7 years, and seven good years are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty ears, blighted by the east wind, are also 7 years of famine. It is, as I told Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he's about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout the land of Egypt, but after them, there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that it is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning man and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. And let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years." And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh and food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. So not only does Joseph give the interpretation of this dream, but he also gives the solution. So the interpretation is really bad news. It's that a famine is coming and there's no way of getting around it. But at the same time, he tells them what they need to do to prepare for it. Now in a moment, we're going to see that Pharaoh instantly decides that Joseph's that wise man who should oversee everything. And that was only possible because of the difficulties that he went through up until this point in his life. So the betrayal of his brothers, and then to Potiphar's house, and then by the cupbearer forgetting him, all these things prepared him for the moment that he was about to enter. So it was that time of preparation that got him to the point of promotion. And I want to encourage you with this idea that God's delays are not denials. They are preparation. And we see this multiple times in the New Testament said in various ways, that it's often not something that we're eagerly looking forward to do, because these delays many times come in the form of some form of suffering. For example, Romans 5. Suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. So in other words, the suffering that you and I deal with, assuming we deal with it correctly and turn to God, it can lead us into a deeper relationship with Christ. The author of Hebrews says something similar in Hebrews 12. It says, "For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And that word discipline can also be translated training. So it's the painful training in our lives that then grows us into the people that God wants us to be and that God can use. I grew up watching the first several Rocky movies. Rocky started out as a guy who, you know, he boxed a little. But as the story goes on, he's eventually selected to fight the world champion, Apollo Creed. And when he finds out that he's going to be fighting the champion, guess how his training changes. Dun dun da da dun da da dun 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 da da dun. And so his training gets more intense. And so suddenly you see Rocky start running up the stairs, going like this. You see him in the movie drinking raw eggs. Not sure if that's really transferred well with time, but you see him pummeling raw meat, all for the purpose of fighting better. In Rocky IV, you see him in the rafters doing sit-ups. But I haven't ever tried that before. Someday. But each of the best Rockies, which is 1 through 4, have a similar theme. Harder training equals fighting better in the ring. And listen, often God will work in the same way in our lives. That, can you imagine how Joseph would have been if at the age of 17 he was telling his brothers his dream when one of Pharaoh's soldiers rides up to him in a chariot? And he's like, excuse me, Mr. Joseph, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, needs your help. Well, at the age of 17, Joseph probably would have thought, of course he does. I'm the bomb diggity. I'm the king of the world. I'm awesome. But now, after 13 years in various prisons and slavery, Joseph's different. He doesn't just say, I'm so awesome. Instead, he looks to God. He says, God's awesome. So God's delays are often preparation for him to do something in your life. And sometimes that may be preparation for a skill, but other times, and often, it may just be simply preparation to improve us spiritually, that we rely more on God, that we humble ourselves, because many times pride gets in the way. I've shared before a number of times about my own life when, before I was a pastor, I worked as a hospital social worker. And after a couple of years working as a social worker, I felt that God was leading me to become a pastor, to go into pastoral ministry. So I quit my job and I moved down to North Carolina with my new bride to study at the seminary full time. And I ended up graduating in 2008 with a Master of Divinity. And then I started applying for jobs. And as I've told you before, I was not picky. I was willing to do just about anything the Lord led me to other than youth ministry, because I was available, but I wasn't crazy. And so I thought that dedicating my life to full-time ministry, if I did that, that God would want to use me. And so I applied, and I applied, and I applied hundreds of times, hundreds of emails of sending out my resume, but no one wanted me. So as graduation got closer, I watched as some of the talented students got jobs as pastors, not only associate pastors, some went right in and were called right in to become a senior pastor. And from a seminary student perspective, that's like hitting gold right there, going in your first job right into a senior pastor. Well, what did I get? Nada. Nothing. On top of that, I don't know how this happened, but my wife got pregnant. And she had been the one that was working full-time, putting me through seminary. And so suddenly, my sugar mama was about to take a break. She was going on vacation for a couple of months. holding the baby, watching TV. That's what they do, right? No, just kidding. And so I got so desperate that at that point I began applying for youth pastor jobs. But even they didn't want me. And so to make a long story short, it took really a couple more years before I was hired as an associate pastor. And during that time, I wondered often what God was doing. God, here I am. I went to seminary. I quit my job. It's not like I quit my job to try to become a famous actor or become rich and famous. I came to serve you, Lord, and yet nothing. Lord, what are you doing? In the meantime, I began volunteering on Sundays at a nursing home down the street, and I led a church service at the nursing homes. And during that year or two that I was waiting, that I was simmering, I was preaching to these folks with dementia in the nursing home. And as I did that, my preaching got a little bit better. Not great, but better. And I gained some valuable experience that made me a better pastor when I was eventually hired. Additionally, when I was hired as pastor, never for a moment when I was hired did I ever think, wow, I'm so amazing. Because I had gone through years of realizing that I'm not so amazing. So instead, I thought every moment, and this goes now to even now, I thought, God, I can't do this without you. I need you. If anything successful is going to happen at the church I'm at, it's going to be you, God, not me. See, God's delays are not denials. They're often preparation. Moving into the next part of the passage. You see, he did that in the life of Joseph, and he does that in our life as well. But now we see that God also works in his timing for his purposes. So going to verse 37, we see, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? And Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen. By the way, do you see this theme with Joseph? He has that his nice robe at the beginning, and then he loses it, and then it's bloodied and torn up. And then with Potiphar's wife, he loses his outer garments again. And he's in prison, and now he's being given these fine clothes and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, bow the knee! And thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. So in a matter of moments, Joseph goes from being a lowly prisoner to second in command in all of Egypt. In the next couple of verses, we also learn that he's given the daughter of a priest to marry, which is another indicator of his high position. So this is like rags to riches. This is the original version of Annie right here. And in the remaining verses, I won't read all of them, we see that Joseph carries out the plan that he had suggested. So he, over 7 years, collects grain. And then when the famine comes, he begins to use that stored up grain to feed people. So he also has two children, Manasseh and Ephraim. And then in the last few verses of the chapter, we see really why all of this is taking place, why God is doing this, which, by the way, Joseph did not know while he was in prison or while he was a slave at Potiphar's house. Verse 56, so when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened up all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. And that all the earth includes the family that would later be called the Israelites. And so it's through Joseph that they are saved. And so I want to take just a slight detour here. I couldn't really find a good spot for answering this question in the flow of the sermon. So I figured I'm just going to plop it right here after this. And I want to ask the question briefly, where is Christ in this passage? Because we've been asking this every time as we go through the book of Genesis. And as I've mentioned before, that we see Joseph is seen as a type of Christ, meaning that his life and story points us to see and to understand Jesus Christ better. And so this comes out all throughout the story of Joseph. And in this chapter, we see that just like Joseph, Jesus is exalted from humiliation to glory. So that rags to riches story of Joseph is the exact same, that Jesus goes and is born to this little teenage girl and to this very small tribe, this poor family. And then he is in earth and humiliated and beaten and mocked and then crucified. But then what happens after that? He rises from the dead. And through that, he is glorified. We also see that just like Joseph, that Jesus offers a way to be saved. And if in the story of Joseph, it's more of an earthly way of being saved. But just as Joseph told the people, this is what you need to do to be saved, Jesus gives the way to salvation, to true salvation, to the ultimate spiritual salvation. And then third, just like Joseph, Jesus is a mediator. I didn't read all those verses in Genesis 41, but we see that during the 7 years that Joseph, that there's the good years, he collects grain. But when the bad years come, we would read that the people would go to Pharaoh, and what would Pharaoh do? Pharaoh would say, not my problem, go to Joseph. And that's exactly what they did. And so Joseph is like that mediator, really, to Pharaoh and into salvation. And so they go to him. And likewise, Jesus is the one who stands between us and God and makes a way for us to be with God. So Jesus shines brightly in the story of Joseph. As he goes from the pit to slavery to the prison and then eventually to the palace. So little tangent now, little trail aside now. And I want to wrap this up with one more thought. The story of Joseph is an amazing story. There's a reason why it's so popular. As he goes from the prison to the palace. But as I thought about it, can you think of any situation where Joseph could have accomplished this in his own power? There's no way. Never in a million years would someone say, I'm going to become a prisoner in another country so that I can then become second in command in that country to then save my home country. That makes about as much sense as someone wanting to become, who wants to become like vice president, going and getting arrested, and then to be able to then come back and implement a particular policy. It's just, that's crazy talk. And there's no scheming that could have brought him to that point. So this was only possible through God and in his timing. I read about bamboo trees this week, and that when you plant a bamboo seed, nothing happens. First year, nothing. You water it, you fertilize it, you look down, and there's nothing. Second year, you look at it, nothing. Third year, you look at it, from what I read, nothing. Fourth year, still no visible growth. By that point, after 4 years after planting this little seed, you would likely think, or at least I would, that's nothing's going to come here. That seed was no good. But in the fifth year, something incredible happens. The bamboo suddenly shoots up, growing 90 feet in 6 weeks. So what's happening during those first 4 years? Well, the little bamboo is growing underground. It's developing a root system, unseen root system that is then going to build the support for its future growth. And God often works in the same way. We may not see the progress. We may feel forgotten. But he's developing roots in our life. And he's preparing us in obscurity for what he plans to do publicly. And that's what we see in the life of Joseph. He spent years in the pits and prison. But when the time was right, God exalted him to save a nation. So let's let that be a reminder to us to trust him, to endure in the tough times, that when we're going through suffering, to remain faithful. When we're in those, so to speak, hidden years, may we hold fast to him. Students who are here today, you may feel like you're sort of in those transition years, those hidden years. I want to encourage you, don't give up. Remain faithful in those hidden years. God is preparing to do something in you that's great in the coming years. And wherever you're at in life, there's likely something that God's doing in your life. I want to encourage you, remain faithful. So whatever stage you're at, let's stay close to God, and let's be ready for him to use us when it's his time.